This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, right on top of things, as usual. Okay, and welcome to the M Squared TechCast for Monday, October 10th in the year 2016.
The beginning of our second year together.
It is indeed.
I know. Yes. It should be like some sort of anniversary song play or something.
I think that's a paper anniversary.
Is that what
the
it
first
is?
One?
Okay,
yeah. Good. But yeah, paper's going out of business, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. We'll call it digital.
Everything's electronic now.
Sure.
But we've got a very cool show for you today. We've got some folks from CDH, our partners in Detroit and Grand Rapids in sort of vendor agnostic IT consulting. We've got Janet Tyler in the studio here with us. A little later, Terry Bean in the studio with us. And also Dan Lorman talking about the latest in cybersecurity from his perch as former state info security officer and now a consultant in the biz.
Probably making a lot more money, too.
Well, hopefully. Yeah. Let's start it off with CDH. Mike, take it away.
Okay. Well, what we have on my website right now is a guest column case study from Steve Smith and his partner Jerry Dwinell of CDH, where they delivered the world's first and largest Office 365 hybrid, I could do it, search service application in production at Delphi. Now that I butchered that, why don't you explain it in better language, Steve?
Yeah, very good. So Microsoft announced a brand new product back in March called Hybrid Search Office 365, and we were working with Delphi, and we successfully deployed the product about a week after their product launch. And what it does is it allows their 40,000 users at Delphi to access over 19 million documents within seconds.
Wow. That's just a few users there. So tell us how you how do you do that on a timely basis? Is it caching? Is it a bunch of data centers all over the place? I mean, how does all this work?
Yeah, so what happens is there's four or five servers that sit at Delphi, and they're constantly scanning and indexing all of the content within Delphi, these 19 million documents. And then the hybrid search application pushes those to the Microsoft Cloud, and that's the cloud that Delphi then uses for the search application itself. So you open your browser, you go to the cloud at Microsoft at Delphi, which is a custom, a proprietary version just for Delphi. And then when they go to do a search for any of the keywords or data that they're looking for, they within seconds get access to all the documents securely that they have access to.
And Delphi is a very large organization, are they not?
Yeah, about 40,000 plus users at Delphi. So mostly engineering, as you can imagine. They're an engineering company. So most of engineering, looking through best practice documents, engineering documents, looking to reuse products from different divisions or functions. That way they're not, kind of duplicating effort. And if they're creating new products, like some of their driverless car technology, they may be able to use pieces and parts and products from different divisions that they may have already, manufactured.
And this this project allowed them to get rid of a lot of servers, dozens and dozens of servers, right, that they had been operating themselves?
Yeah, so most organizations that size at, 19 or 20 million documents, that's 40 or 50 servers, for an on-premise environment like that. So leveraging the cloud and Microsoft's Office 365 technology, now it's just the four or five servers, so they were able to reduce cost and they actually get kind of better performance out of leveraging the cloud with Microsoft. So they're actually recognized by Microsoft as a showcase customer, not only because of this technology, but because they're using many of the Microsoft products. And It allowed them to win an award at the Ignite conference last week in Atlanta, Georgia. And they won the migration, what they call Meta Hero Award. And so basically just wanted to thank Sean Murphy from Delphi, who is the project sponsor, and Darshan Kondola, who was the Delphi team lead, along with Manas from Microsoft, who was on the search team that helped us. And then also just wanted to thank Martin Garland and Dave McBaron from Concept Searching. So it was a big team. There was probably 15 people involved in the project for several months. But again, it's the world's largest and first ever hybrid search solution.
Now, is that something that know-how, are you going to take that and offer that to other clients? Or what exactly are the next steps?
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually taken that same technology and brought it to several clients already. And we're actually working with more clients, not only in the manufacturing space, but also in the healthcare and legal verticals. It's a very powerful technology. You know, as you can imagine, trying to find, you know, in a corpus of 20 to 50 or 100 million documents and data, having, you know, sub-second access to that information is very, very important, right? It allows people to be a lot more effective with their time in finding information not only that they may have authored, but that others within their organization around the world may have authored. So it's a very powerful technology.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what kind of customers are, who's migrating to this kind of technology right now? Is it larger customers, smaller customers? What's in it for a smaller customer, somebody who has maybe, 19,000 documents instead of 19 million?
Yeah, so it's the same technology. And what's really nice is it scales from a price perspective. So even small to mid-sized customers, public sector customers, government sector customers, so customers of any size actually are already using a lot of cloud technology from Microsoft. What this does is it allows you to securely search the documents within your organization. So it works exactly the same way with 19,000 documents as it does with 19 million documents.
And I would imagine something this big that you won and this visible, will this allow you to leverage it and move up into larger customers, more Delphi-like customers?
Yeah, again, customers of any size, it's really about the need, right? So if you take a small to mid-sized, healthcare organization, like you said, that may only have, a million documents or a million pieces of data, it's still about accessing all of their information in a single place. So, it does open up more opportunities for us to work with much, much larger organizations. But again, it's kind of a specialty of ours. So we kind of specialize in enterprise search and what they call knowledge management and content intelligence. And again, it works for customers of any size.
I know knowledge management was a big buzzword about 15, 20 years ago, but I think it's making a comeback, right?
Well, search has been a big buzzword, and so is business intelligence and artificial intelligence. Those are current big buzzwords. The same technology that we're using for Delphi and many of our other customers can also be used for business intelligence. So not only being able to search and find documents, but also find data and report on data with business intelligence tools. And now using, IBM's and Microsoft's artificial intelligence suites, actually being able to look through that information and to do predictive analysis and deep learning on it is something that is now, again, making a comeback after 10 or 15 years of being a big buzzword.
Okay, cool. Hey, we only got a few minutes left. I know Mark Becker, a partner at CDH, is on the line. You there, Mark?
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Great. All right, so let's talk a little bit about your Halloween bash coming up in Grand Rapids. I know I was just at your Detroit bash, 2 weeks ago, I guess. And you do these once a month and alternate between Detroit and Grand Rapids. But what's happening with the pumpkin patch thing you're doing up there? I saw you have the really cool logo on the website there with the pumpkin with the beer tap in it.
Yeah. Yeah, literally, there is no beer coming out of a pumpkin, but
rats,
we do have
huh?
pumpkin beer.
Yes.
So we're releasing some of our own homebrewed beer this time around. Some milk chocolate stout. Ooh. And peanut butter stout. And if you could imagine maybe mixing those together, you might get like a
headache?
Reese's peanut butter cup stout. So anyway, yeah, it's just our tech mash. You know, just think about people with tech in the tech career and people that like drinking beer all coming together and mashing together, and we call that tech mash. So it's just Halloween themed this time around, and again, probably the most special part about it is we're releasing 6 versions of our own beer at this gathering. So come on over if you're interested in some unusual beers.
And that's October 26th at your Grand Rapids office on 15 Ionia Avenue, right downtown. How do they just
right downtown?
Yeah, go to your website to sign up. Is that how they do it?
Yeah, you can just go to our website, cdh.com. You'll see an invite on the front page there. If not, you can also go to Eventbrite and look us up that way. That's where you see that picture of the tapped pumpkin.
Yes.
So happy to host it, and happy to see you guys there.
And you'll be back in Detroit, I assume, back in November, some Thanksgiving theme or something, right?
We're going to probably take a few months off. And maybe do something first of the year, somewhere in there for Detroit, and probably the same for Grand Rapids. It takes us a while to recover from these events.
So what kind of crowd do you get for these things? How many people generally come?
Well, let's see. Detroit was probably about 20. Grand Rapids typically more. Mm-hmm. As you might have heard, Grand Rapids is a beer drinking town. So we get a lot of beer drinkers at Grand Rapids. We've had up to 40, I think, in Grand Rapids.
Okay, right. So it's a reasonable sized crowd in terms of being able to get your questions answered. That's good. All right. Well,
well, there's a lot of us. Yep.
Okay. Well, we want to thank our guests from CDH on their regular monthly appearance. Steve Smith talking about how they helped Delphi win a Microsoft award, and Mark Becker talking about their Halloween mixer coming up October 26th. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back in just a moment. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, the only radio program you're listening to right now. We are part...
That's what you call clear logic.
Yes, yeah, right. We are part of the podcastdetroit.com network and very proud to be so.
Yeah, absolutely. And proud to have a woman that I've known since she was, I think, a high school girl, weren't you?
Oh,
when
yes,
I first met you or something?
A stem cell, I think.
You probably, know, really yeah.
Young. Early days.
Janet Tyler, longtime PR person, but now, drum roll, please. She's the COO of Red Level Network.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And this is, the beginning of the fourth quarter. Hard to believe. Where'd that year go by? But this is budget time. And that's what Janet wants to talk about is, you know, all you IT people out there have got to sell your IT budget to the C's.
Yes, because you are frequently viewed as a cost center and yeah. not a center of, you know, profit or at least breaking even a little better.
So, yeah, until you get hacked, then all of a sudden you're a god, right? You know, so.
That's right.
But anyway, let's talk about that. Let's talk about you have some interesting points you want to make that's going to help all those IT people out there sell their budgets. Take it away, Janet.
Well, I can start with letting everyone know, I hate to be a buzzkill, but unfortunately, budgets looking for 2017, according to Gartner and Spiceworks, are going to be pretty stagnant next year. Mm. They were actually down a little bit this year and down the year before that. So clearly, the C-suite is not listening. And if anything, the move to the cloud and moving entire data centers and modernizing is not helping that situation, because I think there's a lack of understanding from the C-suite about, you know, what it means to move to the cloud. And so by cheaper, meaning, well, we should have to spend less, right? So I think it's more challenging than ever in that scrap for budget dollars.
Well, and then, of course, when the horse gets out of the barn and they've been hit by a bad guy or girl, whoever's doing that out there that takes their IP or other interesting stuff that they don't want to surrender to the world, then all of a sudden they get religion, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if, you know, you've got all these IT people, right, that have made the move to the cloud, their data centers are modernized, you know, hopefully we're in a position in 2017 where you can kind of begin to focus on more proactive monitoring and security as you're heading into, well, I guess before the crisis hits, because we all know it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of when, right?
Absolutely. You're all going to get hit. And of course, we don't know about that, because if they get hit, they're very quiet about it. Or if somebody's got a great technology to defeat it, they don't want to talk about it. So it's hard for us to really track what's going on. But I think it's really bad out there. But let's talk a little bit about, all right, so you got these IT folks. How do they sell this to their CFO?
Well, I mean, I think if you're really in charge, and hopefully you are in IT and the digital transformation of your company, right? You really want to be able to speak the CFO's language, so you kind of need to think like your CFO, and that has to do with numbers. And IT people are traditionally great at dealing with numbers. You know, you can run a traditional return on investment kind of a model, but you really need to do more than that now. So yes, updates and security patches are happening automatically; they're being pushed down from the cloud. But you know what you really want to do is be more of an internal consultant to the folks. You know, not just teaching them how to work a piece of software, right? But really understanding why they need that software to begin with. What's going to really help them be more productive? And why does the company need to make this investment? And then most importantly, how you measure that increase in productivity. So I think a lot of IT people are remiss. They miss the opportunity to measure and benchmark and invest, because that does cost some money typically. To assess, okay, how are people currently using or not using this technology? And then, you know, after the fact, after deployment, now look at what's occurred. People are doing this task faster. We've moved to paperless, whatever the expected outcomes are. But they're really going to want to see concrete, actionable KPIs against that budget request.
Not to mention the security aspects. I mean, you're getting ready to leap in there, Matt, but go ahead.
No, it's just that I like how you think in that, you know, IT people deal with numbers. They deal with fact. They don't, you know, they this is not an exercise in psychology here. I mean, it's an exercise in hard numbers. You know, that's kind of how it works. So right. You'd think they'd have that in common with the CFO.
They do, but the CFO also likes to see, you know, in advance, what are the project resources, the scope, the requirements, and importantly, the timing, right? And then, of course, the expectations for what's going to be the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so, I think for a long time, you know, it was, we need to do this massive deployment. We're changing our operating system from Windows, you know, X to Z. And, you know, really at this point now with Windows 10, a lot of those, you know, major upgrades the way they used to be are just not what they used to be. So that means that the office of the IT director or CIO really has to move to, you know, digital transformation and really adding value to the organization. And that is often acting more like a consultant to the employees. Even Microsoft is moving away from just how many licenses. Okay, we sold, you know, 5,000 to this company, you know, check the box. Well, what Microsoft is asking us as partners is, what is the consumption on that full Office suite? So if they just migrated, you know, obviously Outlook is a huge application, great. Microsoft says, you know, thanks, yay, that's good for you guys. But no, we want to know beyond that. And I don't know if you guys have done the upgrade yet to the latest versions of Office 16. But, you know, when you click on the waffle inside of, which is the I think Microsoft calls it the start button there on the upper left, it opens up a whole host of applications that most people, you know, within the organization have no idea. What is Delve? Why do I use it? What's Project Planner? There are a huge amount of tools beyond just the traditional Microsoft Office suite. And Microsoft's measuring us on, you know, consumption. And I think if IT directors can make that move, to, you know, what other technology that they've just always used is already maybe currently available in some of the software as a service stuff that they're buying, whether it's Microsoft, Google, it doesn't matter to me.
Is that all part of Office 365, those things you described?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it's all part of Office 365. And when you open it, it opens up what I call like a quilt of all of these different applications. And I can't tell you how many client meetings I've sat in and people have said, oh, what is this? I'm like, this comes with your subscription. So Microsoft is really starting to look at those consumption numbers now and saying, you know, okay, what's being used in the organization? And then, and the IT director, you know, what are the opportunities and what are some other things that we're probably already paying for that we no longer need because it, in air quotes, you know, might come with their license that comes along with Office 365 or whatever application. I'm not really pushing Microsoft. It's a good example. I think, at how the IT director can get more dollars.
What else does the IT person need to do to sell this to the C's?
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, demonstrating dollar and cents value, right? I mean, you really need to be able to show, and yes, we talked about baselining and benchmarking, but, you know, why does it make sense to do this upgrade, to make this change? Clearly, moving to the cloud has shown, for instance, you know, the increase in or the decrease in electrical costs and some of the cost of ownership of operating. I think that the speaker before talked about, I think he said it would be 48 servers worth of data or something like that. I mean, those are pretty clear arguments. But once you've already made the move to the cloud, it's really starting to think about things like artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things and, you know, all of these different, you know, digital transformation pieces of the technology mix that I think IT people maybe are not thinking about because they're really just, you know, they don't have the resources, as we've already said. Budgets are going to be flat next year. And guess what? Gartner and Spiceworks says there's not going to be much additional headcount internally for these IT folks either. So, you know, the deck is kind of stacked against you. What ends up happening is you end up tin cupping, going from department to department to try to scrap together funding, you know, to fund your IT project, when really what you could do is build a comprehensive plan. And hopefully you're thinking about this now so that before the CFO comes calling, usually around mid-November for a full robust budget for the fiscal year of January 17, you got your ducks in a row and you're ready to go. So it's kind of thinking, yes, in the softer stuff like productivity and employee engagement and those kinds of things. And then it's just where the rubber hits the road. Okay, these are going to be the actual dollars that we save versus the cost to deploy.
Okay. I'm also thinking that right now the CFOs still are baby boomers who didn't grow up in this environment. And the Gen Xers now are moving into senior management. They'll be an easier sell. And certainly the millennials, whenever they get there, will be a great sell because they get it, right?
I think they do. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm an Xer and I feel, you know, I look twice when budgets come across my desk to make, you know, my staff more mobile and more engaged because I have bought into the concept that technology really truly is a game changer very early from my first Atari, right? I think you're right about the baby boomers. I think that there might be more protocol or process to go through. And the millennials, you know, I think the jury's still out on how they'll behave in the C-suite level. I mean, obviously there are a few, but they're definitely the exception and not the rule.
Okay. So how else are things going at Red Level Networks? How's it going overall?
Things are going really well. We're having a great year. Our revenues are up, I don't know, 40 to 50% this time year over year. We're
hiring more people?
Not before the end of the year. So okay. we actually just hired 5 new people. So we're kind of digesting that, but we're always taking resumes off of our website if you go to redlevelnetworks.com.
I jumped on Matt's question. Go ahead, but finish
it. No, that's all right.
I didn't mean to step on your toes.
Is how they're hiring. So tell me a little bit about what segments are growing fastest, both of your business and what sectors you're serving.
Well, our managed services practice is really growing very quickly. As I talked about, that there really isn't more headcount, right? So the internal help desk guy, you know, mm-hmm. the guy you email to help you fix your Outlook or your Word or this server being down is kind of non-existent. That guy's not there. He's not internal anymore. That's being outsourced. And luckily, Red Level is benefiting from that. And so we're really moving entire companies to the cloud. So a lot of the things, you know, using Azure or Microsoft's Azure product or our own MyCloud offering, taking entire companies and putting them in the cloud. And interestingly, working with startups or earlier stage companies who are literally born in the cloud, cloud native. They have no servers. They have nothing on site. It literally is all in the cloud. So we're monitoring and assessing and doing all of that work for them with really an office manager type contact.
We're going to have to leave it at that. That was Janet Tyler, COO at Red Level Networks in Novi. And if you want to read her column, it's on my website right now, mitechnews.com. I'll let Matt take us out here.
All right. For right now, this is the M Squared TechCast, and this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're part of the PodcastDetroit.com network and very proud to be so. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have with us, as we do most every month, Dan Lorman, who's with Security Mentor, and formerly the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Michigan. How you doing today, Dan?
Doing great, Mike. How you doing?
Well, can't complain. Nobody listens anyway, right? So...
Good weather here now. It's beautiful, beautiful October.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we've been promoting and talking about now for several weeks is coming up next Monday, October 17th, the North American International Cyber Summit, but we just call it the Michigan Cyber Summit for short. Now, I know you're going to be there, right?
Absolutely, yep. And it's going to be Governor Rick Snyder headlining it, and Great lineup of speakers. Do you want me to walk through who's all going to be there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So David Behan, the CIO for the state and the director of the Michigan Department of Technology Management and Budget, the state chief security officer, Rajiv Das, who's just joined the state. Well, he's been with the state now for over a year, but he's joined up, just moved into the role of CSO about 2 months ago. So he'll be speaking. Stu Davis, the CIO from Ohio. We have Terry Heck from AT&T, General Joseph L. Legaro, I don't know if I pronounced that quite right, but from the chief of the National Guard Bureau, Brigadier General Timothy Lunderman, Dwan Neely, CIO from the state of Indiana, Beth Niblock from the city of Detroit, and then a long list of other speakers here, so I don't know if I'll go through all of them, but Terry Sager from the Center for Internet Security and Brigadier General Michael Stone from the Michigan Army National Guard.
Okay. We hope to be there. We're still waiting to get make sure from our father figure, Dave Phillips, whether we're going to be doing a live broadcast from there or not, but we think we are.
Yeah, we've been cleared by the people running the show.
But we have to wait for David to get back to us. But I think he's probably going to set that up.
That'd be great. Yeah, I think it's going to be another great program. I mean, they've got a long list of speakers. You know, it's really encourage people. I think get you a link to it. You can put it out at MyTech News. But you just go to Michigan Cyber Summit, Google that. I mean, I could read you the whole long URL, but it probably lose you people driving on the roads right now and stuff. So, but it's Michigan Cyber Summit, October 17th, downtown at the Cobo Center.
All right, so what's the scariest thing happening out there right now? I mean, that's a great question to ask you because you always scare the crap out of me. So feel free.
Yeah, there's a lot, actually quite a few. You know, there's, of course, the big news in the last couple of weeks has been a couple, two or three big stories. The one big one that, you know, actually happened a couple of years ago but just got reported on was the big breach with Yahoo that was announced last week. And, you know, over the weekend there was an announcement that, you know, that was 500 million records with Yahoo.
Yeah, I got an email from Yahoo. I'm going, I had a Yahoo account? I don't even remember having it.
Yeah, I think I had one like 5 years ago. It might still be active.
I think for me it was more like 15 years ago. Yeah, yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and they're saying it might have actually been a billion. I mean, there's debate over whether it was 500 million or a billion. One person even said 2 billion accounts. So it's hard to believe these numbers. But what I found really interesting over the weekend is it's now out. I think it's probably the opening volley of a you know, a bidding thing. But Verizon says they want to give $1 billion less to buy Yahoo now. So you know, people who ask what's the cost of a big data breach, and you could be talking about $1 billion, which is pretty unbelievable when you think about it. If that really turns out to be the number, my guess it'll probably be somewhere below that, but maybe that's Verizon's opening volley. But a lot of stories about that out on the press this weekend.
The other thing that I read that is that this breach actually occurred, 2 years ago? But for some reason,
yeah,
they didn't let us know for 2 years. What's
that's
that all
exactly
about?
Right. Yeah. They claim they just knew, but it happened 2 years ago. They claim they just, you know, found out about it a few months ago, and, you know, well, because it was ongoing. They couldn't, you know, it was an ongoing investigation, so they couldn't let people know. But so that was a huge deal. The other one I'd like to talk about, though, maybe in the last, you know, 5 or 7 minutes here, Mike, is the whole breach that happened with, you know, the Brian Krebs. I don't know if you guys discussed that last week or the week after, but
no.
I find it really fascinating. The website, the DDoS that happened to the Krebs Online, you know, blog. Which really unique about that, it was it happened about a month ago, back in September, but, you know, it's after the last time we spoke. But the interesting thing was it came from IoT devices, so Internet of Things devices, mainly cameras and DVRs that had been hacked, smart devices all over the Internet. They're saying could have been up to over 1.5 million web cameras that were hacked, and they were used, taken over, became bots, and actually used to do a denial of service attack against Krebs' website, which,
wow,
you know, really, I think is a huge story.
Yeah, I've been saying for years, I've been saying since, you know, people are probably sick of hearing it by now, that the Internet of Things really should be called the Internet of Things that can be hacked. And what apparently happened here is we've got a whole bunch of these Internet-enabled devices, from routers to cameras, that either have, you know, people haven't changed the default password, you know, username and password, or they come with a hard-coded username and password that you can't change, right?
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, more and more of these devices are being shipped. And, you know, one thing's really clear. I mean, the bad guys or the hackers, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call them, some people think they're the good guys. The hackers are way ahead of the manufacturers. And these things are being shipped with default passwords. They're easily hacked. And they're being taken over. And you know, really, you know, anybody who has, you know, just listening to this, who has any of these internet-connected devices, whether it be smart kitchen devices, you know, microwave, refrigerators, you know, cameras in your house, whatever, I mean, right off the bat, you need to be going in and changing those default passwords. You know, the shipping with those, and most people never change them, is a huge, huge challenge. But also, just being able to, a lot of times, unfortunately, some of these are hard-coded, and they're not changeable, which is really unbelievable. So I just did a blog that I sent to Mike. I think it's out there in MyTech News now.
It is.
About this, and I think, you know, people said, okay, you know the problem. Maybe you heard about this Krebs DDoS. What can be done about it? Well, the other news that came out last week was the Cloud Security Alliance. A lot of you probably heard about the Cloud Security Alliance. They've, you know, very, very big international group. From multiple countries. They have an IoT working group, and they put together a series of 13 recommendations that should be followed. And they're not easy to follow, but it's a free 80-page white paper you can download. It's out on the Internet, Cloud Security Alliance IoT paper, Internet of Things paper. Really walks through kind of step-by-step some of the things that can be done to address some of these vulnerabilities.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what can be done? And again, that it is on my website. It's the lead story. So folks that are listening, if they want to check it out and read it, it's there to read. But go ahead. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of those recommendations?
Sure. Well, they have really, it lays out guidance in a number of different areas. You know, what are the challenges? Results from the survey that the CSA, the Cloud Security Alliance IoT Working Group, asked, you know, practitioners around the world, discussion on security options, categorization of IoT device types and the threats, the recommendations, which I'll walk through in a second, a detailed checklist for security engineers to follow during the development process, and a set of appendices that provide examples for the threats. And those 13 steps, they kind of walk through a kind of broad areas. You're going to, as I say these, you'll say, well, that's pretty broad, and it is. But under each of these, there's several pages of recommendations. So they start off, like, number one would be building a secure development methodology. Second would be secure development and integration environment. Third is identity framework and platform security features. So identity, we've talked about that a lot, but, you know, the whole identity, you know, management issue is a huge issue. Number four is establishing privacy protections. Five is hardware security engineering. Six is protecting data. Seven is secure associated apps and services. Eight is protecting interfaces and APIs. Ninth is providing secure update capability, which is a huge issue, by the way. You know, a lot of these things can't be updated. They kind of ship. They're cheap, you know, internet connectivity, but they don't have any ability to be updated if there are, you know, vulnerabilities found. Then implement security, secure authentication. And then the last three are establishing secure key management, so encryption, provide logging mechanism, and performing security reviews, and dives into kind of outside entities, you know, doing, as we think we've talked about in past shows, having somebody, you know, pen test it, penetration test your devices. So all of those are things. It sounds a lot like more, almost like a traditional, you know, framework for building secure applications. But unfortunately, these kind of the lessons of the past haven't necessarily been applied to the Internet of Things. And so unfortunately, a lot of these devices are kind of cheap. They're first to market. They have the cool factor, but they're really just not secure. So this kind of walks you through that methodology.
All right. So basically, the situation in Michigan is what these days? So you, how do you see the threat landscape here?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously there's a lot of threats that are still just kind of, you know, everyone's talking about the election, of course. You know, what's happening with Russia. We talked about that a couple times ago. Continuing to see, you know, new WikiLeaks releases. I mean, the reality is, you know, the bad guys continue to be ahead of the good guys, and it's not just in Michigan, it's all over the country. So we're seeing that with DDoS attacks, we're seeing that with ransomware, we're seeing that with obviously the election headlines as we head within 1 month now to the presidential election in November. You know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see that Cyber Summit next Monday and hear those keynote speeches, because honestly, you know, we've been saying this for a while, and I think it continues to happen that there's not a lot of real clear answers that are being provided by the technology and security industries right now. It just seems like we're always one step behind what the hackers are doing. So it's a dark time right now, I'm being honest, with the cybersecurity industry. I think in Michigan, I mean, there's also tons of opportunities too. So you say, you know, it sounds like being very negative. You just heard the previous, you know, speaker talked about the job opportunities. I mean, there are tons of opportunities in cybersecurity industry. You know, with problems come the solutions. So there's a lot of opportunity for jobs for in the auto sector, you know, autonomous vehicles, on and on and on. But right now, I'd say the hackers are ahead of the good guys.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. So thanks for scaring us again. Appreciate it.
It's not even Halloween yet, and you scared me.
Yeah,
you know?
And if you're listening out there, kids, if you can be a cybersecurity consultant, be one, because you will make six figures right out of school.
One for Halloween.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, Dan Lohrmann. Give us the URL of your business again, please.
Yeah, sure. It's securitymentor.com. So securitymentor1word.com. And you can read my blog and tweets at govcso. That's at govcso.
All right.
Oh, thanks very much, Dan. A little chorus there, okay. You know.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
All right. Well, for right now, we'll be back in just a moment with our next segment. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with today's final segment on the M Squared TechCast. In studio, we have here well-known gentleman, scholar, raconteur.
Bon vivant.
Yes.
What other words can we conjure?
Who are they talking about, Janet? I'm looking around the room. There's those two and you two females. So,
and well-known street fighter, Terry Bean.
Back in my days of Mortal Kombat, you guys couldn't even hold on.
Yes, that's an old Sonny Elliott line.
Looks like
so that's
wearing
a
Minnesota Vikings hat. I can't quite tell.
I am. Hey, 5-0, you got to represent.
There you go. Okay. You're from Minneapolis originally, right?
As much of a Detroit homeboy I am from Minneapolis
as well. Cool.
I claim dual residency.
Yeah, my son had a very good time in graduate school there at the U, as they call it.
Right. It's now U of M, right? They couldn't have U of M. We'd already taken that, so they had to be the U.
Well, which they stole from which Miami stole from them, I think. So that's
and actually did it better, right? You program your college players. Well, you know all about PR.
Rock,
you get a message and get people
went
to stay
to Miami.
On point.
The Rock played for Miami, you know.
Right.
So look at how Dwayne has done now. So we haven't even introduced our guest yet, have we?
Well, it's Terry Bean, ladies
and gentlemen. Okay, yeah, that's
Terry Bean. Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Okay.
Yes.
That is the man's name.
And
you were at TEDx last week, and you had just a heck of a time.
Well, don't forget Janet. We have to introduce Janet.
I thought we already introduced Janet.
Well, I've been here, but now I'm
we're
back.
We're reintroducing her now.
Okay.
People can't see her, so we have to tell
them. Oh, that's right. And some people do listen to separate segments cut up instead of listening to the whole hour, which you really should do.
Janet Tyler, the COO of Red Level Networks, and also, just like Terry, is it a producer or sponsor? What's the word we want to use?
Producer.
Name tag says producer, so that must be it.
The TEDx show.
TEDx Detroit.
Which I sat in on for about 3 hours last week, right into you in the upper reaches there at the media center.
You were in the cool kids'
seats. I could not get to, unfortunately, so sadly.
And my comment to Janet when she came in was, wow, that was really diverse. Was there a theme? And she goes, no, there's not supposed to be a theme, right? So
there's a theme. It's ideas we're spreading, right?
Is that what it is?
Yes. At its simplest and clearest point, that's what we're doing.
But not on any one topic. So you'll see folks across technology, entertainment, design, and pretty much anyone who has an idea to share with Detroit. We welcome that.
And that's where they got the name, folks. Talent.
Technology.
Technology.
Entertainment design.
TED.
Yes. So I did not.
There's the big secret. There's
the
no
X?
Guy named TED.
Yeah.
Okay. And then with the X, that's somebody like Xavier or something?
X means independently produced.
Oh,
and
got it.
So they give you kind of the license and the blessing and a little bit of a playbook that you're supposed to follow. We're getting better at that part.
And this is fourth or fifth.
Oh, you're such
year.
A rule follower, Terry.
Yeah, right. I'm known for that. Hey, yeah.
He never
really
colors
linearly.
Outside the box.
Yes.
So, how many years now?
That was eight.
8 years. No kidding. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that many.
Yeah, because it started out, I know, at, where's the bell? My employer, Lawrence Technological University. There's today's plug.
Boom.
We're trying to get one in.
Thanks to Karen Evans.
Yep. And it barely filled up a 300-seat auditorium, and now you're filling up 5,000-seat, mega venues, basically.
Was it 5,000 at Fox?
It was 2,600 is kind of what ended up being our total count, which was a record year.
Wow.
We're very proud of it.
Record year. 600 students came in on scholarship.
Oh, that's cool.
So part of everyone's ticket, because people are like, it's so expensive. Yeah, well, we're bringing other people with you. So we got a bunch of high school students from all five counties, right?
Oh, that's cool.
There was a bunch of them, because I was walking in from the Opera Center garage where I had to park because everything else was full. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed how many students were on the street.
No parking for the media, sorry.
I know.
Just cold coffee.
Yeah, cold coffee. No, actually, the food was quite good. And they just took it away too soon, right?
Oh, yeah. Mike and I were standing there watching him, and we're like, he's kidding, right? He's bringing it back.
Snooze, you lose.
Okay. Well, so. What were the highlights for you? It's like asking you to pick which child is your favorite, I know. But what were the highlights for you?
You can do that, too, if you want.
I love
probably her out in the rating room, right?
Yeah. She's my highlight every day. Go ahead, Janet. I'd love to hear yours.
I love Jeff Owens, the chief technical officer of Delphi. Kind of told the story of an autonomous vehicle that Delphi developed that essentially drove autonomously from San Francisco to New York.
Ooh.
And just told the story of everything, of all of the different industries that popped up and the disruption in a good way that autonomous driving will bring, such as you know, the lack, maybe we won't, maybe we'll need less parking lots and those kinds of things. And it was pretty cool. I could imagine those young high school students in the room kind of thinking, oh, that could be a business idea. Maybe we could go that direction with that. It was pretty cool.
But they're also, I know the Army TACOM is really involved in this, and they're talking about how this is going to work in the civilian sector, too, where you have like the convoys of cars, where you have one that's kind of doing the lead and everybody else syncs up to it.
Everybody else is drafting.
Yeah,
right.
Drafting, yeah. Essentially. Yeah. It's like NASCAR out there, yeah. Or something. But that would be kind of cool, too.
It's a great idea.
A lot less road
rage.
Very
worth spreading.
Right.
Yeah,
it was absolutely. It was a cool story. Lots of young people, young college engineers working on that project, and great pictures and good visuals, and it's just a good story.
It's a nice example of tech.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
What about you? What did you like?
You know, unfortunately, this year I didn't get to see as much of it as I would like because I was bebopping around and taking care of some things. So
plus
I saw,
was eating upstairs all the time.
I was mostly
chowing
just watching.
Down.
There
know,
were so. Cookies, man. There were cookies. You got to eat the cookies. You know what? I was very adamant that I had to see the start. So Kari Turner is a friend of mine from the Mary Coleman A. Young Foundation. They're doing great work bringing a bunch of Detroit area students not only to college, but through college with an exceptional graduation rate. And Kari talked about kind of debunking some of the myth and taking away some of the stigma that Coleman Young had. Mm-hmm. And I thought that story was really excellent. Talked about how what Young did years back kind of prepared us for what Detroit is today. And I really liked how he just kind of flipped the script on what so many of us, especially north of 8 Mile, thought. And kind of change some of that around. Yeah.
So let me sort of play the devil's advocate because I dig that role. So what's the end game here? What do you hope to come out the other end of the sausage machine here?
With TEDx Detroit?
What do you hope that does?
I can give you a good example. Jason Hall was on our stage 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah,
he's the founder of Slow Roll. He's the founder of Slow Roll Detroit. So on Monday, mostly, let's face it, the suburbanites head to the city and spend thousands and thousands of dollars in the city drinking beers and eating foods along the bike path route, even beyond his imagination. I mean, he was there. He had a little idea. He had some friends going on bike rides on Monday nights, and it was a small group.
He was going to do it regardless.
Yeah, he was going to do it regardless, right? There was no, you know, no company, no nonprofit, no nothing associated with it. It was just an idea, and look at what it's become. It's unbelievable what that has turned into. So, you know, the idea is, you know, if you have a great idea that's worth sharing and you have a great story to share, we encourage submissions. I think this year we had more than 500 applicants come in to speak and get on that stage. Jeez. Whether it was present their art form or whatever.
Their music, their dance troupe, their artistry.
Yeah, it was or their actual all over the board. You had the belly dancers caught my attention.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm
surprised.
Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
I got pictures in my phone if you'd like to see. But then you had all sorts of musical acts I'd never heard before.
Yeah, and we do one of the things that Janet didn't mention earlier. The theme, really, is that you have to have a tie to Detroit or, at the very least, Michigan. It doesn't matter whether you went to school here and were only here with us for a few short years or if you grew up here and moved out, but you have to have been here. So all of this that we're showcasing at TEDx Detroit is Detroit or, again, at least Michigan-based at one point or another. And so, I mean, what a local cool thing, a belly dance troupe here hanging out.
Yeah, you wouldn't think Detroit belly dancing, they don't sound like, you know, they're a fit. But
there was 7 or 8 of them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, quite a few.
It was, I mean, it's a crew. And so the music was diverse. And
yeah, there's some hip-hop groups playing.
Yeah.
Aaron James Draplin from the Draplin Design Company actually now lives in Portland, but came back to Detroit to kind of talk about his roots and the fact that he's, you know, still a homegrown fan of Detroit. And he was definitely a crowd favorite. I think he had a standing ovation. People were just so into that guy. But you can check out TEDxDetroit.com and kind of learn a little bit more about him. I think his bio is up
there.
Yeah,
you were live streaming this thing too, right?
Yes, we did. Okay. Yes. The videos are not up on YouTube, but they will go up.
That was my next question. If you missed it, is it available to watch?
I always tell people, yes, And within 60 to 75 days.
Yeah.
It's always longer than we want it.
Prior years are up there, though, if you check us out on YouTube and you can see, go back and see if you can find Jason Hall. I'm not sure if he's up there, but you can see some of the stars of Detroit
there's
today.
There's 200 plus talks up there already. So wow. TEDx Detroit, go to YouTube.
And each one's a separate segment. It's not streamed end to end, right?
It's not streamed. It's everybody's got their own individual video, which is part of the reason it takes so long.
So you had 500 people plus apply for the speaking slots. How many speaking slots were there?
I want to say there were about 17.
Yeah, and 24 probably different acts all told.
Okay,
right?
All right.
So
the competition was fierce, that's for sure.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We do a call for speakers every year, usually around the first quarter of next year, so be on the lookout for that. And a lot of people leave the audience, and I can't tell you how many people, I'm sure, Terry, oh my gosh, I've got this great idea for a talk. And then when we do the call for submissions, they kind of, I don't know if they chicken out or they just aren't prepared for it but start thinking about it now. I mean, if you have an idea that's worth spreading, we want to know about it.
Yeah, follow the Facebook page, TEDx Detroit, or you can go to TEDxDetroit.com. But the Facebook page is really where we kind of first announced that. And then certainly we're on Twitter as well at TEDx Detroit. I normally see it around June. We always want to do it in January, but something always seems to come up.
Yeah. We don't want to do it too far in advance because if it's innovation, we'll get old if you wait too long.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So June, July seem to be really hot. I think we cut speaker applications off at the end of August this year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's got a nice window, but you gotta be concrete and know exactly what you want because pretty selective as who gets on that stage, as you can imagine. Like you said, Matt, the competition is fierce.
Let me leap in here and give Terry a shameless plug for Motor City Connect. Go ahead.
Oh, man, thanks.
Different. Well, sort of related.
It's sort of related. So, kind of similar. It's all about getting people together and doing great things for our area, certainly. Motor City Connect Business Networking Group, we meet twice a month, once on the first Tuesday of the month, 11:30 to 1 in Novi at On the Border. Second time is the fourth Tuesday of the month, 11:30 to 1 in Royal Oak at BD's Mongolian Grill, MotorCityConnect.com.
Cool.
All right. So, Janet, do you feel like you got your life back now?
I do. In fact, this week I kind of looked at my calendar and said, I could actually go see my mom and I can, maybe get a game of golf in.
Spend
I'm pretty
time
excited.
With your children and all that.
Yeah. And I have this whole other day job because don't forget all of our roles as producers of this large event are our volunteer.
Secondary team.
David King wants you in the office once in a while.
Yeah, I think
right?
my boss is calling. He wants to know where I was last week.
How long was your hangover from TEDx? And I mean, we didn't really even drink afterwards.
No, it takes a couple of days. You know what? And it's funny because this is my seventh year and you start to, I'm noticing like Lou Riggs, I'm getting too old for this expletive because I'm getting more tired
every year. Did you hear that, Matt?
Yeah,
she's getting too old. Yeah, right. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have to end this merriment now. Hope you enjoyed the show. And as we get more information on next year's TEDx, we will share that. Right, Matt?
All right, absolutely. But for right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com. Remember, you'll be able to hear this week's episode again in segments within a few days up on the site. And previous episodes are available at PodcastDetroit.com.
And David says we are live next week at the Cyber Summit on October 17th.
That's right. We'll be live on October 17th from 3 to 4 at the North American International Cyber Summit. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Roush and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.